everybody, and welcome to 3-Point Perspective, the podcast about illustration, how to do it, how to make a living at it, and how to make an impact in the world with your art. I'm Jake Parker.
I'm Lee White.
And I'm Will Terry. And all three of us are professional illustrators, and we've been working in the children's book field for nearly 25 years. And we've all published together about 50 books, and we've all taught illustration at universities.
Each week, we're going to come at you guys with a different topic. Sometimes we're going to agree, sometimes we're going to disagree, but every time you're going to learn something brand spanking new.
You think brand spanking new, or
margin? I don't know where the spanking comes from there.
Okay. All right. So it's Will's topic today, but before we get into that, I wanted tell everybody listening about a new class we have at svslearn.com that just launches this month. It's Gina Lee's art licensing class. It's the part two to that class. And this is something you really don't want to miss. I learned so much from listening to her and seeing how she does art licensing. So she actually has artwork that she's making money from, thousands of dollars from, she created in college that she's licensing out, and it's getting printed and put on
bags
and flags,
shower curtains,
and calendars,
shower curtains. Yes, all that kind of stuff. And she collects a check from it. And in this course, she teaches you how to do that with your art. So check that out. Go to svslearn.com, and you can check that out. And of course, that class is included with the subscription. Just wanted to make you guys aware of that and make sure you're not sleeping on that thing. All right, let's get down to it for today. This topic is Will's. It's your show, Will. Take us wherever you're going to take us.
Okay. And I'm counting on you guys to take us into bizarre tangents, okay?
I will not let you down.
I want to see the stories that come out of this, where you guys take us into anecdotal areas. Over the weekend, I was at FanX in Salt Lake, and being that I do this podcast and I do my own YouTube channel and I do, I teach for SVS and I've taught at school, and that this is a home show for us, I just met tons of people. I have a lot of students come up to me and want a portfolio review, and I love doing it. I love giving portfolio reviews, but that was the kind of the catalyst for wanting to do this podcast. Was some of the things that came out of that got me thinking, and I kind of wanted to revisit a topic that we had done on the third Thursday a few years ago, which is, what to put into your portfolio and how to set up your portfolio so that you maximize your chance of success in getting the kind of work that you want to get. So I want to talk about a couple of those interactions that I had. Without naming names, but I also want to talk in general about this topic and find out what you guys have to say, obviously. And then we also have a handout with a list that we might kind of talk about in here. And you guys, I don't know, can we include that list in the show notes, or is that something?
Yeah, it'll be included in the show notes.
Okay. So one of the things, and this is, I'm going to make a generality, but the main thing that I've noticed is if someone says, if they say, will you review my portfolio? The first question I will ask them before I look at it is, what kind of work do you want to get? And I'll usually get two different responses. One is, I don't know, and I just want to work as an artist in some illustration market. And so that's a common response. Another one is more specific, which is, I want to do comics, or I want to do children's books, or I want to do graphic novels, or I want to go into animation, or, they'll kind of know which area they want to go in. My general advice for the people who don't know is that if you don't know what market you want to go into, there's no way you can set up a portfolio that will please an art director, that will make them want to use you, that will make them want to hire you. And the reason for that, and you guys can tell me if you have any other experience, but I've noticed that in my experience, art directors are very literal, and they tend to, like, you would think that if you're good at rendering anything, right? Like, let's say you've drawn a bunch of, you know, cars and fire engines and transportation vehicles, and that's like your thing. And maybe you have a few people in there. You would think that someone would look at, if they were done really, really well, as the artist, you might think, well, they might hire me to do a children's book because they can see how good I am at drawing and rendering these objects. Right?
Exactly.
Yeah. But it doesn't work that way.
It really is so specific. It's shot that little aspect of it. The industry shocked me when I first got in there. Like, whatever you show, like, literally will be the thing you get asked to do. Like, if you just happen to have like two illustrations with chickens in it, you'll just be the chicken guy. Like, all of a sudden, all the projects will be geared around chickens, and that's it. And it's bizarre that most art directors or publishers or whoever don't seem to make the leap. Like, oh, you can draw a fire engine, so you can draw a motorcycle or anything else, you know, that's technical.
Yeah. It's bizarre. Because the fundamentals, you as an artist know that the fundamentals are there, that if you can draw a person, if you can draw a human figure really well, you can basically draw just about anything, right?
Exactly.
I think what happens is, and I'll try to explain this to the person that I'm reviewing their portfolio, is what you're asking this art director or editor to do is to stake their reputation on the fact that they think you can draw the thing that they want you to draw. You know, so in other words, they are putting themselves at risk if they hire you and you don't come through, because then it makes them look really bad in front of their colleagues. They're trying to build a career. They're trying to move up. They want to become creative director or senior editor or senior art director. And they're afraid of us, right?
Yeah, they don't want a curveball, basically, is what's going on there. And so a lot of times they're just going to go for the sure bet.
Yeah.
I'd like to go back to your original premise. Like, when somebody's coming up to you, they give you the portfolio, they ask for the portfolio review, and you ask, so where do you want to go? I just like that to expand on that little moment for a minute. A lot of students that I do portfolio reviews on, I ask the same thing. It's always good to get an orientation of where you want to go so we can direct you. But I just want to highlight that most of the time, that question basically says, you know, how are you going to be in business? Like, where, you know, it drives the images like Will's talking about, but it also drives everything else, like who the market is, how the market pays, how you get paid, the frequency of the image, how many images you have to work in a month. Say, for example, like for an editorial illustration, you're going to be doing a lot of illustrations per month because the pay is typically lower. But it changes it. The whole thing is a business. Like, do you have a business plan? That's how I read that topic now, because if you don't understand how the images are licensed and what the pay structure is, you just need to know all of it. So basically, I don't want you to see that as just like, oh, do you know what kind of images you want to make? It's, do you know how this business works and which direction you are going to go within this business?
So how, expand on that, Lee. Like,
you need a business plan. If you're at the point where you're saying, hey, I'm trying to get work, and you're going to get critiques, you need to say, when Will says, hey, what direction you're going, you say, I'm going into editorial illustration, and my markets are Chicago, New York, and, you know, Philadelphia, and here's the magazines that are up there, and here's the kind of work that they're hiring, and here's my work, and here's how that work fits in there, and then what do you think? Do you think it fits well? Because now we've got a very clear picture of not only the images, but also your life as an illustrator. I can say, hey, I'd recommend taking, you know, these four images and do them in as postcard mailers, and then alternating those monthly with an email campaign. And I mean, it's a whole setup. And so just knowing where you are going, both in the work and everything else, is important. And that's just a simple business plan. And I'll be happy to include a link in the show notes, maybe a PDF or some kind of just simple business plan, so you can orient yourself to where you're going.
So to be clear, what is a business plan exactly?
A business plan is an evaluation of the current market and your particular direction. So who's getting work? So using our editorial illustration example, you know, who's getting work right now? Where is the majority of work being hired? Are the rates going up or down? These are just questions. It's a business plan. It's just a series of questions that ask you things. Who's going to be your main competition? What do you have that that competition doesn't have? In other words, what's your competitive advantage? How are you going to get hired instead of them? And you need to be able to answer those questions.
I think we're going to change the topic of this podcast.
To what? Sorry, I didn't want to throw you.
Business plans. This is interesting. No, I mean, like, that's a really logical approach. And I think most artists probably don't. Most don't do what you're suggesting. I didn't. And it's a smart way to go about it. I think a lot of artists, and this goes back to what I get when I ask, is a lot of people will say, well, I don't know what I want to do. I just want to do, or I just want to work somewhere. Is that a problem? Like, what if someone doesn't know the difference between how they would feel? Like, you can't really predict how you're going to feel 3 or 4 or 5 years down the road. So if I say I'm going to go into children's books or I'm going to go into comics, but then I'm not happy later, how do I avoid making that mistake?
I mean, you can always change it, but you have to make the definite plan, because you're just going to be treading water if you don't. And my analogy that I use in a lot of the classes where I talk about this, and I think a portfolio class is a great place to talk about this, is, you know, get rid of the art side of our business for a second, and let's just use the analogy of a restaurant. So you have $100,000, and your friend wants you to invest in some business idea. So you go and you sit down at a cafe, say, "All right, pitch me your idea." And he says, "You know, I want to open a pizza place." And you say, "Okay, I got $100,000. Let's invest in that pizza place." Okay, and then you say, "Okay, where's it going to be? What's going to be your secret? How are you going to compete with these other companies?" And they're like, "I don't know. Oh, I don't have any of that. How much is it going to cost to open? Oh, I don't know. You know, what's the material needed, and how are you going to, what's your advertising plan? Oh, I don't have an advertising plan." Would you give that person $100,000?
The difference is they're not an artist. The guy opening a pizza or the gal opening,
doesn't matter. It's the same deal.
He's not an artist. I know, we're dumb.
But using your analogy, it's even worse. Because what if you sat down with that friend? He says, "I want to open a restaurant." And you say, "Okay, what kind?" And they say, "I don't know." Would you give him $100,000? Of course you would. But so artists do that. That is most artists' business plan. Most artists have a 3-step plan for a business, and that is create image, post image, sit back and pray that something happens, that somebody sees it, and that they get hired. And that's the extent of it. And I mean, yeah. I'm only half joking. Like, that really is.
That was mine.
Yeah, mine was mine too. But if you look at any other business, I mean, literally any other business, they would die with that model, because they have to know their customer and they have to know their product. And we do have a product, and I hate referring to it like that because it's so removed from, like, I am my art and this kind of sexy tie that we have, because we are our art. I mean, a lot of artists feel like there's no separation between them as a person and the art, but it is a product. I mean, if we're making money from it, and you have to know where that product's going to go and who's going to buy it and how much it's worth and how it's bought and sold within that industry. And so when you come to me for a portfolio review, there's a lot of questions that I'm going to ask you. And so you better be ready.
I just want to make art. Why can't
you
I
can
just
make it. There's art. Nothing wrong with making art, but you're not going to make a living at it.
You look distracted over there, Jake.
Is it my turn to talk?
It looks like you're like the sound guy, like at a music show, and you're like testing the Dolby button, testing mic 1, 2, 1, 2.
Okay.
It's because I am that guy right now.
So a question that I've gotten a lot, emailed to me, you know, DM to me, is, you keep saying that I need to pick a market to work in, but I want to work in all of them. I don't care which one. What would you guys say to that person who's like, I'm just excited. I love everything. I love comics. I love illustration. I love licensing. I love automation. I just want to, like, I just want to get hired anywhere. I don't care.
Yeah, what I would do is pick one as your main, but dabble in the other ones. And if you find some success happening in the other ones, and if some of them are showing to be more promising, then go for that. But I would pick the one that you know you can actually make some money at, support yourself in, because nothing else is going to exist if you can't support yourself. If you don't have some sort of financial engine running.
You want to use that Venn diagram. Isn't the Venn diagram the one with the overlapping circles?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you want to have one that, like, you know, one circle, the thing I'm good at. And then the other circle is there's lots of opportunity in some field. And hopefully those overlap massively. Like for me doing children's books, those are almost a perfect match. Like there's not two circles. It's just one. I'm interested in that. And that's what I'm going into. But, you know, some people want to do, like, concept art is a great one because it's so, the technical side of it is so difficult that they're really interested in it, but they don't have the skill to do it. You know, so that would be an outlying circle without much overlap. You know, interest is high, but ability to do it is low. And the job market is also very, very, very competitive. So that might not be a good one to go into. You might be interested in it, but, you know, you just think about this. How many musicians are great at all kinds of music? How many, again, restaurants are great at serving all kinds of food? Most of the time, that's going to be not how many karate studios teach all kinds of karate, but then we want to do that. It's just weird once you start lining us up next to other businesses and saying the same thing for them. It sounds goofy.
That's a good point. I like that.
Well, fortunately for me, you guys fell into the trap that I set.
Nice.
Where I withhold the right answer and let you guys fumble around with the wrong ones first.
I can't wait to hear this.
Yeah, this is going to be good.
So, no, joking aside, the answer that I give people, and I gave this over the weekend, is if you don't know where you want to go or you feel like you could be happy anywhere, but the problem is that art directors won't hire you on your current portfolio, at least that's my analysis, then one way to solve that is to create a project that's in one of those markets that's very specific to one of those markets and let that guide the pieces that you select for your portfolio. So for instance, one, your pieces are all over the place. So, or well, your subject matter is all over the place. So maybe, you know, someone might have, let's say, 20 pieces that are all different. There's no sequential art in there. Well, comic books, children's books, graphic novels, they're all based on sequential art. And so one of the things you're not demonstrating in your portfolio is that you're not showing a character moving from scene to scene. You're not showing that you can handle maintaining a likeness in your characters. So if you create a project, let's say you decide I'm going to write and illustrate a graphic novel. Well, you said you wanted to do graphic novels. So make a graphic novel. I mean, start the work. It doesn't have to be finished. It could be a section of a graphic novel, or it could be part of a children's book, but it would, you know, it could be as few as three sequential art pieces in your portfolio. Mm-hmm. It could be as few as five, three or five. But you could do that multiple times with a particular market. And then you would have a portfolio that an art director from, you know, a children's book publisher could envision hiring you to do a children's book. Okay, well, now you have a portfolio that could attract an editor, an art director in the children's book world.
Wait, so you're saying if you want to do everything, do one thing, but then that portfolio for that one thing can get you a job for anything?
No. Then if you aren't satisfied with the work that you did, let's say this person chose the children's book market. So they do sequential art for several different books. And maybe a suggestion would be they pick a fairy tale that's, you know, in public domain so that they can easily do their take on Red Riding Hood or the Three Little Pigs. Mm-hmm. Maybe they do it fractured, so they're adding a twist to the story. But then the art director has an emotional connection to that story that they didn't have to generate. So they're already tugging at the heartstrings of the art director, showing them something familiar. And maybe they do that three or four times and make a portfolio. If they don't like the work they've created, they can move on to another market. That might help them figure out what they would rather do. Or they start getting work in that market because they've tailored it to that specific market.
Well, can I, if that's going to be the remedy, your suggestion, I'd like to add to that. If you're going to
tweak it, go ahead and tweak
it. If you're going to do that, I think that's a good idea. But if you guys are going to make images, new images for portfolios, and you should be doing this, by the way, where no matter where you are in your career. So using Will's example, you're going to do, you know, three pieces for a narrative. You pick a story. The next step before you make the images is to, or maybe you do some sketches and stuff, see how it's kind of looking in the direction you're taking your work. And then my question to you would be, list five people, companies that buy this kind of work. Go to their website, see what their submission process is, see how much these jobs pay. I mean, you can do a fair amount of research on that, and there's a lot of information available. Who are the art directors that work at these companies that hire for this type of job? Because there's different kind of projects that will be tailor-made for certain publishers or certain companies, and you want to start putting those lists together. For example, if I was going to do a concept board book within the children's publishing field, I would, the first company would be Chronicle in San Francisco. They make that kind of stuff. That's exactly what they do. Whole division that does that for them. And they have all kinds of different board books and concept books that are a little bit different than narrative picture books that I would normally do. So Chronicle would be on my list. I would start to look at Chronicle's backlist and see what kind of stuff they've done in the past. Who are the art directors that worked on the projects that I like that are in line with what I'm doing? And now all of a sudden you have something more than just three images.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. I'm just wondering though, the beginning we started out saying, you know, if you draw chickens, an art director can't see that you'll do anything other than chickens. But is this advice, you know, line up with that, or is this changing that initial statement a little bit?
No, I think it's right in line, because we're basically saying, you know, you're preempting what you want to do. So like, for example, if you pick the Chronicle, you're basically saying Chronicle does this kind of book, and I'm going to make this kind of book because I want to sell this kind of book. So you're kind of tailoring it to that, to get that specific thing.
Like let's use some real examples here.
Okay. Go for
Jake,
it.
Jake, you have to stop. Jake's doing something. You're doing something. I can tell.
What no, his little okay thing threw me off because it was so chipper.
Yeah, but he's doing something. He's looking off somewhere. I think he's like reading a novel or something.
So a real world example would be, I see a lot of people doing scary stuff in their portfolio, and then they say they want to do children's books. So even if the scary stuff is really good, the thing that me as an editor, what I'm looking for in the children's book world, I'm looking for, you know, a lot of things. Can you, like I said before, can you carry a character from one page to the next? Mm-hmm. Can you demonstrate that you can show complex human emotion in your characters? Can you draw kids that are cute and appealing? Can you draw them with different ethnicities, different genders? Can you demonstrate that you can vary your compositions from scene to scene? And if you're trying to take notes right now, if anybody's writing, we've actually got this in a list that we will include in the show notes. But you know, those are all the things. And so again, I will see, you know, Friday the 13th portfolio, I want to do children's books. And I'm like, you're like, at what point are you going to show an art director that you want to? And I also get the fact that it takes a long time to develop a portfolio. So another thing that I had jotted down some notes here, and now might be a good time to go through this. The phases of your art career, right? I get that. When you first start, you're in phase one, which is, wow, I could make something look realistic, right? Do you guys remember being there? Think way back into the Stone Age of your career, right? Remember
that was like 5 years ago.
you drew something and you put the shading on there when you called it shading instead of value. You
know? Right, exactly.
And oh my gosh, it looks like it's jumping off the page. It looks three-dimensional. So that's like phase one. Phase two, some people enter that in elementary school. Some people enter that in junior high or high school. Some people don't enter that until they're college. The next stage is, wow, I'm better than my friends and family. I actually might be able to do this as a career because I'm better than all the friends that I have that mm-hmm. draw, and I'm better than all my family at drawing. The phase three is kind of just a little bit a step above that. Wow, I'm actually better than some of my art friends, the ones that want to do this as a career. Phase four is I'm not getting work as an illustrator, and I finally need a critique. So it jumps up to I'd like to do this as a career, but I'm not getting anywhere. And those are usually the people that come and see us at shows. And like, will you, because when you're at a show, Jake, you review portfolios, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
They'll ask you to do it. And same with you, Lee, I'm sure, right? Mm-hmm. Phase five is I have so much work to do to develop a great portfolio. You start to realize, like, wow, I just am now realizing, like, I thought I was really good, like, years ago. And now I'm starting to become humbled because I'm still not getting the work that I want. And maybe phase six is I need to start creating and publishing projects instead of waiting to be discovered. So we have a lot of people in that stage where their portfolio is actually really solid, but based on the way the market is right now, and I know this takes us into a whole nother area, but basically in publishing in the last, I would say 15, maybe even 20 years, there's been a pretty dramatic change where technology, the internet, printing processes, computers, all the technology that you can now access really cheaply has allowed people to basically skip the line. And so there used to be a long line of illustrators that say, hey, I'm here. I'm ready to illustrate a book. All I need is a publisher to hire me. And then there was a long line of authors saying, hey, I'm writing books. I just need you to find an illustrator to put with me. But then pretty soon people started getting out of those two lines and saying the illustrator, some of the illustrators were saying, well, I can write. And some of the authors were going, well, I think I could illustrate. So, you know, you have Mo Willems doing that going, well, I think I can illustrate. And you have like Dan Santat going, well, I think I can write. And they formed a third line, mm-hmm. right? And all of a sudden, that third line has been growing and growing and growing. Meanwhile, people are both getting into the other lines that were longer. And publishers seem to be picking from that third line more readily than from the other two. So the other two lines seem to have slowed. At least that from my perception, that's how I see it.
I think too, like from a publisher's standpoint, it's also cheaper to work with a writer-artist combo because you don't have to do a separate advance for two different people.
Yeah, they save money on the advance. They save money on hotels when they want to do a book tour.
Well, they never send the illustrator on book tours. What are you talking about?
you know, based on your list of the different phases and stuff, I remember that first portfolio that I took to New York. I just graduated from school, and I was going to be a children's book illustrator, but unfortunately, I had never heard a lecture like the one or a podcast, like the content that we're talking about now. Nobody had ever said it. I'd even gone through portfolio classes at school, and I look back on it and I kind of get a little bit mad at the teacher almost because they never had this conversation. So my portfolio consisted of, I mean, luckily my natural tendency just in image making, everything looks like a children's book image, sort of. Mm-hmm. But there was a project that I did my senior year where I did a series of like 10 paintings that were just based on people that set weird world records. And nobody ever said, what would this be used for? It was just the most random. I mean, it was fun to make, don't get me wrong. And I like the images as just standalone images or just as fine art that's going to go on a wall. I mean, that's kind of what it ends up, as I think back on it, that's kind of where I would see that genre falling. It's just kind of, it's a personal project that I'm doing. It doesn't really have a ton of income potential. But so I go to New York and I've got some stuff that's truly children's based. I've got these weird world records. I took this landscape painting class and I loved some of the images from it. I just liked painting. So those were in there too. And luckily I guess luckily and unluckily, I get there and I had some pretty good feedback, but one of the art directors pulled me aside and he's like, why are these in here? This makes no sense. I had some images from, cause you know, when you're in college, everything kind of leans darker than it normally does in the mm-hmm. imagery. I don't know why that is, but I did these series of images from the Grimm fairy tales, like everybody does. And except for, I picked one where this little girl gets her head cut off and trades it with a cow. So I think the cow is holding this box with the girl's head in it. And great, great children's imagery. It was just so dumb. It was done in a children's style. So I don't want you guys to think that it was like morbid or something, but just, it was so inappropriate. It just did not match anything. And I'm glad that those people that I showed work to could at least see through that, how naive I was, and see something. Cause I did get a little bit of work from that. I got my agent from that, ended up working with some of those people on book projects, but we just never had this conversation. So it was just this hodgepodge. It's just images that I liked. That would be the definition of my portfolio, instead of what market is this? Who hires for this? Why are these images the way they are?
I call it the Batman syndrome, right? So you have people, and I used to fall into this too. It's, you want to be all Batman, 100% Batman, no Bruce Wayne. And Batman doesn't work without Bruce Wayne. Batman, what he wants to do is go out, fight crime in the middle of the night, use his kicking and punching, you know, use all of his toys, drive his Batmobile, have all the fun. But Batman doesn't exist without Bruce Wayne. And Bruce Wayne's the guy who foots the bill, who figured out all the finances, ventures, right? He's the guy that he spends time in the real world, so he knows the effects of crime on his city. He knows all of the big politicians and the big business people, so he knows he can rub shoulders with them and he can figure out how best to advance Batman's cause on those things, you know, in those avenues. And he's also, you know, he's in charge of Bruce or Wayne Enterprises, right? And so he's got to protect Wayne Enterprises from, you know, encroaching board members who want to take over the company and buy out his shares and stuff like that. So all of that needs to happen in order for Batman to go out at night and have fun. And I was the artist that just wanted to go out, have fun, draw a comic here, try children's books there, do some animation, do some 3D modeling, you know, right, all this stuff. And not thinking about, well, how am I going to promote this book that I'm working on? How am I going to get an actual job with these skills that I have? You know, and so I think that's basically what we're looking for. We're asking with you is you that are listening who are wanting to improve their portfolios and improve your chances for get a job. It's, there has to be like the fully actualized version of you is a person who can kick butt in illustration, but also kicks butt in business. And they know how to read a contract and negotiate a little bit. And they know how to take care of their finances so that they're not overextending themselves. And they know how to price a job so they're not getting taken advantage of.
That's good stuff. It's not fun. We should add that. Like, that part is just part of it, though, if you're going to be.
Yeah, it's Bruce Wayne time, but you got to have that.
Somebody's got to schedule the gardener. Analogy.
Yeah?
Yeah. So Batman, there's only one Batman, and there's only one you, and I'm talking to the person that's listening. There's only one version of you as a fully developed artist. So you're not there right now. But when you become your version of Batman as an artist, there's no one that can compete with you because your style is unique and different. And that's where your pizza analogy, Lee, comes in to full swing, where if you were going to try to, what are you doing? You're trying to make me laugh. I can tell.
What?
Who's Jake?
Oh, okay.
Just keep going, Will. don't look at the video.
Okay. So to go with the pizza thing, if you're trying to create a restaurant that will compete with all the popular pizza joints in your town or in the world, you know, you got the dollar slice place in New York City, that's going to be really hard for you to figure out how to compete, how to create a slice that's unique enough that people will stop going to another pizza joint and coming to yours.
Yeah. I mean, pizza is pizza. So you got to come up with something that's going to be good. Do you guys have Mellow Mushroom where you live, Will?
No.
So mellow mushroom, I think they're just in the South. I know that I know there was a bunch in Atlanta, and then we just ate at one here in Nashville. And mellow mushroom is, I mean, it's pizza. It's the same pizza that's everywhere. There's good, you know, some slices are better, but it's generally, you generally know what you're going to get. So what mellow mushroom did is they kind of have the, so this giant mushroom is their branding. And so all throughout the store, it's kind of 60s era Grateful Dead type imagery, and these giant mushrooms everywhere. It's a really psychedelic, I guess would be a good word, is the way that they branded, and all the servers wear tie-dye, and it's just this whole thing. And they just realized it was genius, I think, because you're not going to separate yourself really with pizza per se.
So they did with the atmosphere and the, and kind of the feeling you have when you
And they did, and they did a great job. It's unlike any. It's still pizza, but at least if they somehow figured out what their brand is, and who, and their clientele is going to be younger, a little bit younger than probably general pizza places, and a little hipper. College crowds are probably who they were originally targeted for. So you see this playing out in a lot of different industries. And so how do we do that with illustration?
I'm getting hungry.
Me too. I'm going to go. Well,
the point I'm making is, as an artist, I think that you have a better chance of separating yourself because you can bring your own unique voice.
I agree. You know?
And so now the difference is, it's going to take the person who wants to create a pizza place a lot shorter time to make pizza than it is for you to make art. So the hard thing is, we're asking you, you know, Lee's talking about this business plan. Meanwhile, you're struggling to develop a style and a quality of art in your portfolio to where you're actually able to beat someone else out who's kind of already in line, right? You kind of like bump someone else out of their place and you take their place. Because that's really what we're talking about. There are definitely more illustrators than there are jobs. And that's a scary proposition when you think about it on its merit. But if you put your head down and work, it's actually pretty easy to, I feel it's pretty easy to, over a career, be more committed than other people, because that's really what it takes. It takes pretty much a lifetime commitment of being an artist to get to a place where, you know, you can really compete. And some people, it's a lot shorter than others. Some people come out of school and in a few years, they've already bumped people out of line. And other people, it might take them a decade or two. But yeah, I mean, like,
Can I give a horrible recommendation?
Yeah.
This sounds so counterintuitive. My recommendation is stop drawing for a little while. That doesn't mean a month or anything like that or a long period, but sometimes I think artists, a lot of times, people who brand themselves as illustrators, are just constantly moving the pencil. Which is good. I mean, you may think that, of course, that's good. I'm an artist. I got to move the pencil. I got to draw every day and fix these holes in my portfolio, or not portfolio, but just... I don't even think people think of it that way. They're just kind of moving the pencil. Like, I'm making new images and we've got to post it to Instagram. And my advice to a lot of people, a lot of students like that, is back up, stop moving the pencil and say, what am I creating? Why am I creating this body of work? And it's such a powerful moment to back up. Go look at some other art. Go look at the different industries. Go do a little bit of research and just back away. It doesn't mean stop thinking about yourself as an illustrator. It doesn't mean just watch a bunch of movies and stuff, or, you know, go play. It means, it just means back up and look at the whole picture and say, why am I creating this art? And is there a reason that this image needs to be brought in the world?
That's really good.
I think there's a trap too with social media in that. And I fell into this for a while there, where you have to feed that beast. Like that beast is knocking on your door and you're like, if I haven't posted in the last week, you know, I got to come up with something and post and post and post just so I can keep these followers happy. And ultimately, at the end of the day, like, I actually watched my illustrations go from drawing what I felt like the illustration needed to drawing it more in a square because I knew it would look better on Instagram, right?
You're an Instagram junkie.
Right. So, you know, at the end of the day, I was able to grow an Instagram account and I've been able to leverage that for other things. But what have I not created because I've been growing an Instagram account? What, you know, where's my portfolio suffered? What book didn't get illustrated because I spent so much time growing my Instagram account and trying to do stuff that I thought would get more likes, you know? So I like Lee's advice. Take a step back. You don't have to, you can take a break from social media. You can just kind of do a dive on business and seeing how business works in illustration. Go learn how publishing works. Go learn, you know, go talk to people who are 10 years ahead of you and see what kind of pitfalls to avoid. Your art's going to grow. You're going to get better. You're going to learn how to do it. But this other stuff is just as important in order for your art to succeed.
You know, but there's one of the questions based on what Jake just said of the business plan is, where do you want to be in 5 years? And then the next question is, where do you want to be in 10 years? In Japan, they go all the way to 100 years. So they're thinking very long term.
Yeah, where do you want to be in 100 years?
I'm going to be, well, for a company, it doesn't mean that, you know, just because you're not involved anymore, you know.
Right. Maybe.
I'm gonna offer the counterpoint, Jake and Lee, mm-hmm. to not, you know, to taking a step back. Then you have people like Piper Thibodeau, who grew her, you know, her Twitter's now at 32,000. She's like, you know, 6 years old. I don't know how she old. She's like in her early 20s, and she's killing it. And she's, you know, she's working for DreamWorks, she's working for Scholastic, she's working for, you know, a lot of different publishers. And getting tons of work, and it was all based on her daily painting, you know. Mm-hmm. So there, but the difference.
But it wasn't random, though.
What's that?
It wasn't random, though. That wasn't.
No, you're right. It was the good point. That was part of her business plan was, I am going to commit to doing this, and she's been doing it for years now. And we've talked about her before on the podcast, and I interviewed her on my YouTube channel. But she basically, you know. These companies, she was still going to school, and these companies were saying, well, we want you to work for us. And she had to make a choice. I can't do both. Do I have to say no to some of these clients? Do I finish school? Which is more important? That's a great problem to have. And that was basically, I attribute it to, you know, the pencil mileage is a real thing. So we don't want to minimize that. But I think what you're saying is sometimes people just do that and they don't stop to think about piloting their career and like what they're actually doing.
Right.
Yeah, Piper, she was very deliberate about how she was using social media. So she was using it towards a specific goal, but also she was doing her homework. Like she knew the business side, or she understood what was going on there. And she wasn't just neglecting that for her craft, you know.
Mm-hmm.
She's a good example. Yeah. Good example of what to do.
And another benefit that comes from that is knowing where you're going, is that eventually you will be hired, and it's not always exactly what you wanted to be doing. So how do you gauge whether you take a job or not? And we've been in this business a long time. We've all been offered things where you got to kind of weigh them out. There a lot of jobs are seem like they'd be fun, but ultimately a bunch of them I've turned down more than I've accepted. And yeah. Those ones I turned down is because that does not move me in the direction that I'm actually going.
I turned down what I would have considered kind of a dream job yesterday, which was a board game, which is looked super fun. Mm-hmm. It was character design for 10 characters, which would have been extremely fun. The pay wasn't great and the deadline was really short. And the way that I turned it down was, I said, if you can give me more of a lead time in the future, I'd love to, even though the budget's small, it'd be fun to work this in. Mm-hmm. And the art director said, oh, definitely. I will definitely look for another one. And, you know, sorry to give you such
So it was only the technical details. Like in terms of the content, you wanted to do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's a bummer. That's kind of the worst ones to turn down.
They really are. They're the hard ones. The easy ones are the ones that just aren't right for you right from the beginning.
But that was part of the reason you turned it down. The other reason was you have a specific like direction and a trajectory right now. And that's mm-hmm. this children's book course, you know, for SVS that you want to put a lot of time and energy into. And this particular job pulls you away from that focus,
mm-hmm.
you know? So I know that was like part of the decision process too. And
definitely.
That was you deciding, nope, I have a trajectory. I have a path that I'm on And this,
what is this children's book?
Get me there.
What is this children's book track you're speaking of? I don't know what.
Well, we've been kind of keeping it on the low low, but this is it would be a natural time to do a commercial.
Say the word commercial. I segued into it perfectly.
Our mojo there.
What we're doing is we're in a nutshell. We're redesigning and reshooting our children's book classes. We're expanding the different sections and we're breaking it into different sections. So it's easier to consume, easier to know that you're meeting these different benchmarks as in your progression, and better design, better filming, better audio, better, I would like to think, better lessons. You guys are more involved this time because you guys are going to be doing your sections. Mm-hmm. And it's an exciting thing,
right?
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to be rolling this out starting in September, dropping one course per month for about a year. Yep. So it's really exciting to be working on this right now.
We're going to really parse, you know, what goes into children's publishing, probably more than any other course in history that's ever been made.
We would like to think that it's the most comprehensive children's book class in the world for illustrators. Yeah, we're putting a lot into it. So and so that's why I turned that one down primarily. But yeah, anyway, kind of got off track there a little bit.
No, it's good though, because I've talked about being a mentor to Anna Davis Court over some of the podcasts here. She's the Adobe artist that I'm mentoring, and she's starting to get work, and she got an agent, and she's starting to get work, and so she's coming to me now with some of these offers, and this is how we parse, you know, what she's going to take and what she's going to turn down, and you know, some of them are good and they're right up her alley. It's like a quick hit. You know, maybe the pay's not great or maybe the rights aren't great, but it moves her career exactly where we want it to. Or there was another one that was a series of books that was going to be work for hire, that was going to be done in a style that's not even hers. Man, that was an easy one. Just like, nope, that's not gonna work. But it just gives you power because you can clearly see what you need to do, whether it's mm-hmm. take it or turn it down, or you know, how to evaluate it.
Yeah. So I have a list here that I talked about early on. And I thought we could maybe talk about some of these things on here, and then you could check the show notes to get the rest of it. But I wanted to give a little bit of meat in this as far as like things that we're actually talking about in varying your portfolio. And there's on this list, I believe there's over 100. Yeah, there's a little bit over 100 different items that I feel for you should have or subject matter you should touch on in your portfolio. I'm not going to read the whole
100.
Yeah, I'm not going to read the whole 100.
Can we whittle that down?
Well, here's the thing. To me, the strategy is combining as many of them as you can in one illustration. So maybe one illustration could contain 20. You know, but the idea is that you're going to demonstrate to an art director all of these things, and at the same time show that you're, like the things we talked about earlier, you're showing sequential art, you're showing character consistency, you're showing appropriate drawing and appropriate kids for the children's book market. Because, you know, a lot of people will get the critique, and they'll be told, and this is like a catch-all, this is like the medical equivalency to saying someone, well, I think you have, you know, some doctors will say, well, I think it's probably fibromyalgia, which is a real disease, but sometimes they overprescribe that, they overdiagnose that because they don't know what it is, and so they just kind of lump everyone in. And so the term I hear a lot is, oh, your work is a little too commercial for the children's book market, right? Mm-hmm. Well, what does that exactly mean? And what it means is that they don't feel like your characters are going to fit in the wide spectrum of styles that you find in the children's book market. And primarily, it probably means that it's a little too slick, for lack of a better term, something that you might see in a cartoon. Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe drawn like stuff on Nickelodeon or something like that. More
perfect for animation.
Perfect for animation, but not good.
Maybe not so good for children's books.
Yeah. So one of your jobs as an illustrator, as you're trying to develop your portfolio, is to actually spend a lot of time in the library. I'm always surprised at how many people will tell me, I want to go into children's books, and I'm like, okay, what are your favorite 10 children's books? And they blank look on their face, right? Like, they're not
true.
They're not consuming children's books. They might be, you know, in their 20s. Maybe they just finished school, or maybe they're still in school. And they don't know. They don't even know about the thing. Can you imagine somebody that's a college basketball player that wants to go into the NBA that can't name 10 of their top pro players, you know? If you can't name 10 of the top children's book illustrators and or 10 books, you're not really setting yourself up for a career in children's books art. So that's the first thing. The second thing is spending time in the library or the bookstore and actually going through and identifying and making lists of, like, stylistically, what do these books look like? You know, the top mm-hmm. books, maybe the ones that are facing out, that are selling the best, so they face them out, you know, or that are on the featured picture book shelf. You know, maybe there's 20 books on the featured picture book shelf. What do they all have in common? What do they not look like? Mm-hmm. You know, you really need to be familiar with the different styles that are appropriate in children's books, and try my best advice to try to develop that style. This isn't really a podcast on style, but if we go down that road a little bit, my best advice is to create an amalgam of your top five children's book styles. You know, there's
that's things true. Yeah, that's cool. To add to that, it was like what not to do. We should add that little, the number one thing that I see when I'm evaluating college portfolios is, Jake touched on it a little bit, but I just want to highlight it, that the mixture of not understanding illustration versus animation, and I understand the confusion with students because a lot of times the program is the same. It's like an entertainment based program, and there's a couple of illustration classes, and it's not really broken up. But if you're, you know, animation has a very specific look, not all animation, but I'm just saying the majority of it. So if you look to an artist, and I love some of the work, like Brittany Lee, for example, is that mm-hmm. her name?
Brittany?
And there's a whole host of animation style drawers that kind of work in that same style, and that style couldn't be further from children's books. It's not a great crossover. It's like Will said, it's very commercial almost looking. If you were to bring that style over into the children's book and you start to get portfolio reviews from children's book people, that it wouldn't work as well. And so I see a lot of people that are kind of in this no man's land in between animation and illustration, and they're not good for either one.
Yeah, that's a good point. There's like not enough. There's not enough, like, I guess, structure for animation in the design, right. And yet not enough, like, playfulness or approachableness for children's illustration.
Right.
Yeah. So some of the things that I think you should include in your portfolio would be varying the formats and sizes of your illustrations. So, you know, you've got spot illustrations, vignettes, full pages, half pages, maybe illustrations with borders, maybe, you know, cropped images, but a variety to demonstrate that you even know that that's a thing, right? Like if your whole portfolio is full of fully cropped images, I don't know that you can do a spot illustration. I have no idea what your spot illustration would look like. Color schemes, varying the color palette. And I'm hitting the topics, but I'm not going into some of the specifics.
Having room for type. I mean, that's something that's so specific to
That's
this.
A great one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I rarely see people, whenever somebody's doing something that involves type, like I have my students do a couple of editorial pieces from children's magazines, because that's a really easy avenue to break into in that market. I want them to include the text from, like, if it's a poem and then with a title or whatever, because that mm-hmm. plays into it. You're immediately showing, hey, I know this, how this industry works. You need to place the type. I mean, that's what you say. That's what that image says to the art director.
And I've got that on the list in case you're worried that you got to write that down.
don't crash if you're driving.
different ages. So you do want to show adults and teens and children, because in a children's book, you're going to have all those different things, different races of people, different group activities. Like I mentioned before, character consistency with animals, humans, creatures, vehicles, different props, making sure that your props match your characters, that they feel like they're in the same family. The fact that you're demonstrating environments. Now, if you go to if you go to a comic convention, all you're basically seeing is characters. You know, so everyone's doing their take on a character primarily. And as a result, you have a lot of, you know, just characters with no compositions. So you want to demonstrate that you can do full compositions. You also want to show that you can do maybe spots of characters. The job that I just turned down, it had these character cards that I would have had to have done. And that's with a lot of board games, you get, you know, cards. Like, Jake, you just did a... But can you talk about the thing you just did? You
probably can't. I don't think I can.
Okay. But you did... They were cards with characters on them, right?
Yeah.
That doesn't violate your NDA, right?
Nope.
You know, show different seasons. Mm-hmm. Different lighting, you know, morning, noon, evening, spotlights. You know, show different surfaces, different textures.
I mean, if you just show two characters interacting, you've now left 90% of the illustrators in the dust, because that's something I never see.
Yeah.
It's just two characters doing something.
Yeah,
it's two really, characters. It's really weird.
Or even just a character in an environment.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, sitting down on something or walking through something.
Yeah.
Just to pull a random percentage out of my head, but like I would say 95% of sketchbook, if I just opened a student's sketchbook, it's faces and sometimes character bodies, you know, head on a body, but it does not ever go into the character in the environment or multiple characters doing something, which is, it's kind of weird. It's like, it's almost like whole sketchbooks just full of character design in a weird way. And I don't understand the lure.
And the problem with the student portfolio, to kind of revisit that idea, is that as a teacher, we give assignments sometimes at school that are like, you know, show life and death, something really abstract, right? Or show, you know, some complex human emotion. So, you know, you do a piece. It's not based on a specific character. It's just a face doing something. And in your mind, you're showing an emotion, which you are. But it's not an emotion. It's not a situational emotion that an art director can see themselves using. It looks very student portfolio. And
if you have to add eyebrows to make the expression read, then something's wrong.
So going through, and again, you know, look for this list because it's got everything in there. And I think that your goal should be to, what I would do if I were starting over is I would take this list and I would, every time I create a piece, I would look to see, you know, you might actually even use this list as a word generator to create some interesting illustrations and try to use 5 or 10 of them in one piece. And then you can cross them off the list. And then you can go for another 5 or 10. And pretty soon, you'll have a portfolio that's demonstrating a lot of these different things. I would say some are more important than others. So the one you just mentioned, Lee, the action and emotion, would be probably at the top of my priority list. In almost every piece, I would be trying to demonstrate that. If you're going to be illustrating narrative illustration for children's books or for graphic novels or comics, that's like you're going to have emotion in every single piece, right?
Right.
So they're not all the same, and I wouldn't bump that in order to get, you know, a semi somewhere in one of your illustrations. So to wrap up kind of what I'm thinking about, I actually think that a lot of the answers are already out there. Like if you have, I'll just give you an example. Like, you know, one person showed me their portfolio this weekend and the first illustration that I saw in there was the best one. So they at least knew to front end load their portfolio with something really good. The problem was nothing else lived up to that first image by far. And I told this person, so if I were a betting person, I would bet that this first image is the last image you did. And he goes, yeah, it is. And
that's,
I go,
good.
Yeah. And I said, so there's some things you're demonstrating here on this first image that you're not demonstrating back here. So he was actually holding a really decent silhouette and the other pictures were kind of a mess as far as design. As far as the value silhouette goes and focal point. And I said, so something changed, and then you learn that. And so your job over the next, I mean, ideally over the next couple of months is to work as hard as you possibly can. I don't know what your situation is. Don't know how much, you know, if you have a job or what your situation is. But, you know, I know a guy who redid his whole portfolio in 2 weeks. And that was Kerry Henry, who went to New York out of school. This was before, you know, he was one of my teachers. So probably in the late 70s, I would guess, early 80s, probably early 80s, went to New York. Art director said, your portfolio looks student, doesn't look like anything we could ever use. And was lucky enough that the art director showed him what he should be putting in his portfolio. And he was going for editorial work. And he spent 2 weeks in New York living in a crappy motel. And he went and bought art supplies and redid his portfolio in 2 weeks.
Wow.
Went back to that art director and got a job and was working ever since then.
Wow.
And that's commitment. Incredible. Yeah, that's I don't sleep for 2 weeks and I'm already here in New York and it would be cheaper for me to stay and try to, and I'm really serious about getting this work done. And, you know, here's a guy who said, of course, there weren't any video games on a phone at that time. But here's a person who said, the only thing in this world that I care about for the next 2 weeks is getting illustration work. So the question that you have to ask yourself as a listener right now is, have you ever done that? Have you ever put aside everything for your art career?
Got to do it.
Yeah. So another quick little tip would be, I think the answers are there. I think if you go to children's book illustrator websites, they're showing you the successful ones. You know, so you find them published in the bookstore, go look at their website. They're showing you what a professional children's book illustrator portfolio looks like. Do that. Don't copy their work, but do the type of work that they have in their portfolio.
Very good.
Done deal. Easy. We should have 10,000 new children's book illustrators next week. 2 weeks.
In 2 weeks.
I love it.
I do give students a 6 month. Sorry, Jake. A 6 month window when you're new. That should be your whole portfolio should cycle every 6 months. That would be the minimum, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree with that. I think, is there anything else like we want to add to this? Are we good?
I'm good.
I think we're good.
Wrap it up.
Let's wrap.
All right, everybody. Thank you for joining us. So 3-Point Perspective is made possible by svslearn.com, where becoming a great illustrator starts. And we have been your hosts today, Will Terry. You can find his work at willterry.com and follow him on Instagram at willterryart. Also, Lee White, leewhiteillustration.com is for his portfolio, and you can follow him on Instagram at leewhiteillo. And I'm Jake Parker. My website is mrjakeparker.com, and you can follow my work on Instagram at Jake Parker. Podcast is edited by Alex Sugg. You can find him at his website, alexsugg.com. That's S-U-G-G. Show notes by Tanner Garlick, and you can find his work at tannergarlickart.com. And if you like this episode, please share it around, pass it along to other people you know who are working on their portfolio, and try to put some of this advice into actual practice. So we would appreciate that. Subscribe to us on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. That way you get notified every time a new episode is launched. And if you can, please leave a review. We'd love to hear what you think about the podcast. If you're wanting to join in on this discussion, we have a thread posted at the svslearn.com forums where we're talking about this there, and you can chime in and let us know what you think about portfolios and building a portfolio as well, or if you have any other questions. All right, I think that's it. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time.